Welcome to the Cinephile Hissy Fit Podcast, brought to you by the Ruminations Radio Network and sponsored by Film Obsessive. This is the Tirades Film Movie Debate, hosted by two film critics, cool dads, and struggling teachers. I'm Don Shanahan.
I'm General William Johnson of the Arizona Federation of Impoverished Teachers, rebelling against the Western Alliance and the Florida Union and the Maoist Oregonese. Is that
wow. What are we? Wow.
How do you
know?
Oregonians.
Yeah. You just don't want to say you're a Kerry Lake supporter? Isn't that kind of cover it?
I thought if you just be the Arizona Snowbirds, it'd be just kind of what you are, you know?
We're spring training west is what we are. Really.
Perfect. There it is. So,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're definitely glad to have you folks, and we're glad to have the two gigglers and talkers behind us. This is all for tantrum's sake. We're shared passions and high fives wash away any place for heat. No matter what, we encourage you all to love what you love. But for now, the gloves are off and the hissy fit is on. We are here with a double dais and booth here with the Alex Garland new release, Civil War, recommended by every politician that doesn't want press for November. But that's us. In the booth here today is Don and Will, of course, but then we brought to the show here Kitty Glywell, returning to the show for the manyth time. I can't even keep count of where that is. Kitty Glywell from The Blonde in Front.
Hello, hello. I'm so glad to be here, and especially talking about this film.
Mm-hmm. And joining us for the first time in the Cinephile Hissy Fit, fellow Chicago critic to Katie and I, we have Jeff York of The Establishing Shot.
Hello. Nice to be here. Really, really happy to finally make it.
That's right. So our format is this. Those of you who heard the show before and all you first timers, well, you came to a good one. The recommending lover goes first, but our guest in this case will go first. And we have a little bit of a half love, half hate, or just kind of a scruples plus or otherwise. So we'll have Katie first. We'll have Jeff second. They will get their 5 unnumbered minutes to shower their praise or state their how many case. Any haters in there, and that's kind of a half and half between Will and I here, will follow with 5 uninterrupted minutes of their own to present their counterpoints in any manner of intellectual scorched earth. After that, we'll open it up for about a half hour share conversation where the hissy fit really gets chippy. So, what kind of American are all of you? Katie, yeah. The floor is yours to start.
All right. So, Civil War, directed and written by Alex Garland, starring Kirsten Dunst as Lee, Wagner Mara as Joel, Haley Spaney as Jesse, and a number of other stars. It is a film about a civil war that is happening in America. The first thing you see, which is a surprise to everyone, if you've not seen the movie, I'm going to do a little spoiler for you. Guess what? Nick Offerman is the president. And apparently he's not that great of a guy. But who knows? To half the country, he may be. But one of the things about a war is, of course, it's told by the victors and the mindset of whoever thinks they're winning. And with this, he starts a speech with, like, it's the greatest victory in human mankind, in the history of mankind, which we all know that can't be true, folks. It sort of goes into, it doesn't really go into detail about how the war started, what's going on necessarily in America, but that's not the point. It's more, the point of the journalists and the photojournalists who are going to capture what's going on in America while they're trying to interview the president before the possible regime goes under. Now, Kirsten Dunst is one of the best performances I think she's ever, I've ever seen her on screen as Lee. She is a no-nonsense photojournalist. And one of the things is that when they're talking about her character, they show instances of what she's done and the atrocities that she's captured. Kaylee Spaney is Jessie, who is a youngling. She's new to photojournalism. She's trying to get in there, doesn't really know a lot of stuff going on. And Lee sort of begrudgingly takes her under her wing. And that can lead to a lot of things going on in the film. I felt that certain areas of the film had a little bit of MASH to them, especially a scene between Kirsten Dunst and Kaylee Spaney. But the main thing is that it should show Americans, these are atrocities that go on across the world daily. This is similar to Rwanda, Sierra Leone, the Bosnia conflict, Nazi Germany. There's a little bit of levity with humor with Carl Blusman's character. He plays a sniper who's kind of making fun of the press while they're going to try and do this road trip to the president. And you need that because this is as serious gets. One of the characters in this film, though, that really strikes you is going to be Jesse Plemons, who, right there. I mean, I think this film right now, Jesse Plemons could probably be nominated for Best Supporting Actor, Kaylee Spaney for Best Supporting Actress, and Kirsten Dunst for Best Actress. I think this is a film that should be watched. I think this is a film that should be studied because, again, these are things that are happening around the world, even today, that many Americans just don't think, I don't know if they don't necessarily think they're important, but they don't think that that's going to affect them. And I think it's very clever that they opened the film on the 163rd anniversary of the Civil War in America. I could praise this film on and on. I think it really shows a testament to photojournalism and journalists in general, like the strifes that they go through to capture these images, because it's not about the good or bad. It's just showing everything that's going on. Like, these are people that, you know, could have been your neighbor, that, you know, the next day they call you a liar and they could shoot you in the head. This is something that is hopefully not going to happen. I did have a little bit of an inkling that it might in October, but I'm hoping by watching this that people somewhat, I don't know, change their minds, get a little bit wiser. It's like we can all live through many different things and it doesn't have to come to the tyranny of what's going on. But I recommend Civil War highly, and I want everyone to go see it.
Katie Gladwell, well done. Jeff York, five minutes. Do your thing.
Well, I actually agree with a lot of what Katie said, and I think is going to be heard from Will in a couple of minutes. But I guess because we've already heard a lot of the praise for the movie, I may have to sort of take that other side just to create a more interesting podcast or discussion of the film. I agree that there are a lot of terrific things here. It's a very tense movie. It's very well done. There is some choreography to this, as well as CGI and sort of setting war battles in context of city streets and other places that looks very painstakingly recreated, if not done in actual locations. And you question how it's done. It's very authentic, very vivid feeling. A lot of it is very impactful and tense. It's one of those nail biter movies that I think you're going to be on the edge of your seat during most of it because it's so tense and unpleasant, and it seems like it's already happening. But for me, there are two faults of this film that I think takes it away from being great. I still think it's worth seeing, though. Like Katie, I think there's a lot to talk about here, and films are often not talked about enough, even the ones that maybe don't completely succeed on their terms or our terms, and I think this is one of those. But getting back to some of my criticisms of the film, while they want to sort of play it down the middle and equate sort of both sides-ism throughout and have sort of the rebels or the people who are fighting the supposedly third-term autocratic government of the president that we only see in the very beginning, and he's probably telling a bunch of tall tales, but he looks like a calm, sort of respectable businessman, at least the way he's portrayed here, even though what he's saying is a little bit, hyperbole. I think we don't really get a beat on exactly what's going on here. And I think in this day and age, especially what's going on in this country, we needed that. I think it's a little too easy to pull these punches and say, well, everybody's kind of nuts and it's all gone to shit. And in 15 months, we don't have a working internet anymore or a press that really matters. And yet this film is all about the press. So they start to contradict themselves very early on here. Everybody's running around. The press are the heroes in it. There are four different types of reporters: the young, the experienced, the really experienced, and sort of the cynical, but, you know, that kind of stuff. Some of they all fall in one of those slots, as often reporters do in these kind of things. But who are they reporting to? They're talking always about how they can't file stories. There's no working internet. It seems everything has gone to hell. There's not really much broadcast anymore. And what are they doing? I don't know. That's just one question. Then there's all kinds of other questions that I had. And I grant you, there are certain things that don't always explain this. Not everything is explained in these kind of movies. But I wanted to know things like the two states leading the secession are California and Texas. How did that happen? What do they have in common? What are their grounds that they're fighting for? I think it can't just be enough for us to watch this and go, well, this can happen to any of those countries that Katie listed, and God knows it's happening in America. But I think we deserve, as people going through this right now, in a soft civil war, what exactly is Garland's point of view on this? And if it's all sidesism, then I'm really mad at him, because I don't think that's fair. And I do not think there's an even Steven thing going on in this country right now. And maybe he doesn't think that. Maybe he's pointing the finger at autocracy. I don't know. I found there were too many questions that I had about what was going on here to be able to feel fully sort of outraged by it, because I think we're already in an outrageous state. And I'm not sure if this is adding much to it. This is forecasting or foreshadowing a potential thing that could happen with violence, but we're already there with a lot of this kind of stuff. They've tried to kidnap the governor of Michigan a couple of times. People are making threats and visits to various politicians' home that they don't like. And we have a president in trial now who doesn't follow a gag order and is trying to get people to commit violence against the judge and his family. So for me, I wanted more answers to this, and I just felt that they were starting to pull punches as they kept going through it. I wanted to know where the world was in this. I wanted to know what Europe and Russia and China, maybe the United Nations, are they a part of this all? It looks like America can't even get trucks through. The people have abandoned cars on the freeways. Are they all at home cowering under the beds? What's going on here? Children of Men did a lot of the same kind of thing where they showed a dilapidated society crumbling because there was nobody to take care of it anymore, because children were no longer being born for 15, 20 years and the population was dying off. This is a pretty fast descent into utter chaos in 15 months. And, you know, how is it that the military has turned against the president? Where is his military? These are questions I think you have to ask yourself when you're watching a political thriller that's trying to be of today's time. Movies like The Parallax View and even Planet of the Apes and some of the other things of the past demonstrated how that chaos started and how it got to where it is, and very specifically pointed the finger at the culprits. I wanted a little bit more of a lot more of that here, but I liked a lot of this too. So I recommend you see it. Talk about it, whoever you go to see it with. Think about it. It's a lot to chew over rather than, you know, some ding-a-ling comedy that Adam Sandler is making for Netflix that you're going to forget in 10 minutes. So good for this one. Good for Garland on that. But I thought it could have been a little more powerful if there was a little more of a genuine stance taken, at the very least explaining what's going on.
Jeff York, well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, good luck following all that, man.
Well, no, you know,
as usual,
Jeff, the reason why I invited him on for this one is because him and I were discussing this, and I'll address some of the things that he's bringing up right now in my 5 minutes. But first, I'm sure Alex Garland will really appreciate the fact that I'm going to quote epic and noted philosopher Dalton from Roadhouse, but no one wins a fight. Okay. No one wins in a fight.
Love it.
So here's the thing. And this is, well, first let me get some of my basic thoughts out. When I left this movie, as I was watching it, and now, and first of all, I have to emphasize to the audience that who knows me as a Jordan Peele guy, Alex Garland is kind of Jordan Peele-esque for me. Everything he's made that I've seen, and I'm currently on episode 3 of Devs, but I've now seen all 4 of his movies. I just dig everything he has to say. I feel like I'm not as intelligent or as great of a filmmaker as a lot of directors, because they can put their art on screen. But in terms of things we appreciate, he speaks a language that I vibe with. What I really loved about this film is it reminded me of 4 separate things. Reminded me a little bit of Apocalypse Now, in terms of that kind of all the way down to that one scene where they go to the town that's kind of pretending it's not a war. Reminded me of the French colonists in Vietnam and the Redux. This reminds me a lot of the first Mad Max. I think when people say Mad Max, they think of like the more apocalyptic ones from Road Warrior onwards. I'm thinking about the first Mad Max, yep, where it is very clear that the world is changing. It's just not there yet. So there's still some establishment, but it's crumbling and the world is in chaos. A lot of Gulliver's travels in this, the terms of the book. And then, and when I think of the Jesse Plemons scene, I think of Deliverance, to be honest with you. It gives me Deliverance vibes, just without any of the raping. So those are my general thoughts. That's how I felt about the film. But the one thing that Jeff and I were talking about off air, this is why I invited him on, because I figured we could address it, you know, on a podcast, is I don't think, and the reason why I mentioned that Dalton quote is because I think much like anti-war films have to show war in its viciousness, like All Quiet on the Western Front, the most recent remake, is clearly an anti-war film, but in order to show the anti-war aspect, you have to show war in its most graphic detail. Mm-hmm. I think the purpose of Civil War is not who's right, who's wrong. It's that, like Dalton said, we find ourselves in these situations, no one wins. Mm-hmm. And I also think that by having someone who is not from this country come in, and I'm sure his idea of setting a civil war in America maybe got the green light, but I don't think his intention was to comment directly on American society, but more human interactions and things like that. And the comparisons I was coming up with, because Jeff had mentioned a lot of really excellent, you know, films, Parallax View. I can't remember some of the other ones you said on top of my head, but I was going a little bit more allegorical. Like, this is more Twilight Zone to me. This is more Star Trek. Like, Star Trek, when you really sit down and think about, okay, if all the Klingons are all about honor and being warriors and fighting, who's building the ships and who's the scientists and stuff like that, it's not necessarily important that you break down the how. It's how you get to that situation. I think I also talked to Jeff off air where I talked about, when you really think about the ending of Planet of the Apes, it isn't the fact that somehow the Statue of Liberty got to a beach somewhere. That's not the point. The point is, you could sit there and say, well, how did the Statue of Liberty get on a beach somewhere? Like, because there's no beaches in, you know, New York City or whatever. You know what I mean? It's not about that. It's about the message that it sends. So I think the fact that it doesn't give you answers on these things emphasizes more strongly the whole aspect of the FUBAR situation you're going to be in if you find yourself fighting for ideals that, you know, disagreements that you can't sit down at the table and talk about. The most obvious scene of this, I think this movie is one of those weird movies that's incredibly subtle in some places and very obvious in others. But the scene that really hit it home for me was the scene in the golf course Christmas thing where the snipers are there and they're trying, yes, to take out this gunner. And one guy goes, well, wait, what side are you on? And the guy's like, that guy's trying to kill me. I'm going to try to kill him. And they're like, yeah, but who is he and what are you? And they're like, I already told you, dude, he's trying to kill me. I'm going to kill him. And it gets to that Gulliver's Travel point where the war is going on now at this point, to the point where you don't even know why it's happening. And I like the idea of the human reactions to that more so than explaining to me the details of how this is happening. So, I mean, well, I'm sure we'll get into it later. My 5 minutes is up, but that's my take. I just think not only does it remind me of these fantastic movies, not only is it on a wavelength that I vibe with Garland in general, but I just think it's a really powerful anti-war film. And and it does its message really well, I think.
Oh, that won't be hard to follow. no, I have to actually admit to being right in Will's camp here a little bit. You know me, every movie has a lesson. So I write these movie reviews with life lessons in mind. And sure enough, the first one is no one wins the Civil War. So I don't want to go, you know, all Dalton about it. I went more of like a, I don't know, you know, quotey quote, I did a quote too, but I didn't do Dalton. I did like Jake Fulton. I did something like, there are no winners of war, only survivors, and even they die inside from guilt. They only physically survive to warn us that there is nothing more terrible than what they have done. That's kind of the quote I kind of leaned on for a little bit, because I'm right there kind of with Jeff Scruples, where, and I hate to invoke, especially on this show, apologies to Will in advance, I hate to invoke the Mark Rylance Bridge of Spies shit here that we go through all the time. But all
right, obligatory fuck Mark Rylance.
Yes, before I ruin this, yes, okay. Fuck Mark Rylance, still under the Oscar till the day this podcast dies. That is wasting 5 minutes, but that's cool. Because this movie is going the apolitical route and going the gray route, and doesn't kind of put a lot of cause and put a lot of solutions and put a lot of places out there where, which is weird because, you know, the marketing for this movie is showing off all kinds of American iconography and putting it in the grasp of combat. And I'm like, this is not that movie. You are overselling. But no, because it doesn't dwell and kind of liberate anything or really lionize anybody other than some journalists or any of that iconography, that's for sure. And it's very unapologetic to Battlefield Death. I kind of get to the point of like, if we're going to watch all that and we're going to put journalists as the heroes here, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'll dig that. I get to the Mark Rylance point of asking for what Jeff's asking for, you know, asking for a little bit of what's going on. And, you know, it's not that you have to point a finger. You just need to shade in and color some details. And you can do so without pointing a finger and without doing a Trumpian thing, without doing a stump for what's happening in the world. You can just make your movie. Like you know, if you're going to have Texas and California team up with cowboys and queers, I just don't know how you're going to pull that off in a movie without kind of, again, coloring inside the line. So when I get to the Mark Rylance point, I say it like this is I use the Mark Rylance line. Would it help? And I'm like, yeah, it fucking would. It would help a little bit to just dip the toe in a few places, put a few emphases and dot a few I's and cross a few T's. You don't got to overexplain everything. I'm so happy that this movie doesn't spoon feed a lot of things and, or just, you know, make its own stump or come out with almost its own bias and slant to what it, you know, to really picking a side and saying, hey, you know, I'm out here to make this, because I know the intention. You can clearly as day see that the intentions are here to be apolitical, to stay in the middle. And a great place to do that is to use a journalist to do it, because they're supposed to stay in the middle. And to watch, that's the strongest spine for the movie to me, is watching hardcore, legit journalism work. But then at the same time, I get to the Jeff point of, where's all that? It's great to see those stalwart figures and to put themselves in harm's way and all those things like that. But I'm with Jeff. If that's not going anywhere, and you have half the country, because you hear the characters talk about it, who are just sitting back with their hands and, you know, hands over their ears and hands over their eyes, pretending none of this shit's happening, you know, the other half the country way. If you're going to do that in a country that all it takes is a tweet, a fucking news story, to firebrand us all into, you know, burning the soft civil war that we're doing, to stoke the fires we've got, I guarantee, in a way, this movie's too soft, despite all of the prickly hard places it goes. And it's going too soft because if this was the malaise of what it is that the journalists have to see, of towns that are pretending and soldiers that are asking what kind of American you are, and having the, you know, the well-maintained militia of all the people we think we are going to color in a certain way be colored the certain way they are without putting any color on them, this would be far more chaos than a couple of bad roads, a couple of skirmishes here, and a president who's got got walls around the White House. Now, don't get me wrong, the last 30 minutes of this movie are fucking blistering. They're amazing. I'm not an expectation guy, but that's the movie I needed to see. But boy, that saved it for me in a good way, because the journalist that, now I don't think any journalist would ever get to the tip of the spear point of being right next to the front, you know, breach and secure crowd. But you, to put them in that space, to kind of pay all that off a little bit, to get to Offerman at the end, it helps a little bit. But when you put it all together and you see what it costs to get there, what you're targeting to get there, what you're celebrating to get there without any real good celebrations, it's just missing that extra oomph. And I think it could be done in a way that isn't really big flag waving, really, you know, you can do that with the same subtlety that Garland can do, just with a little bit more gumption, edge, grit to try and not just play it safe. So I think that's kind of where some of this movie is just missing. It is a very good movie, but, to go to sound like Jeff, to be a great movie, You got to burn a few things with the Firebrander too. You got to put some color on a few things and put a few more emphasis on different pieces and parts. If you can do that and turn journalism into heroes and have the stylistic soundtrack and the episodes that you have and the odyssey that you go on, if you can do all that amidst a deep, dark, or horrible thing that's a little more, again, flesh, you've got something greater than just this. I'll get to a comp in 30 minutes, but there's so many other movies that I would watch before I'd watch this one. Fine film, but it's missing that level of good to great. All right, folks, hang tight, and please enjoy this short announcement from the Ruminations Radio Network.
We know you've been scared watching horror movies by yourself. Well, now you don't have to. Hang out with Ruminations of Redrum, all things horror, from movies to the latest spooky games we've played. Coming out, but hurry. The killer's behind you!
All right, welcome back. Open that up to the shared discussion, folks.
Well, I want to address one thing that you mentioned.
Yeah.
About the some damaged roads or some people. Okay, this is one thing that friend of the show, who we're going to have on eventually, Michelle Kisner, was bringing up in a discussion she was having, is, you know, this is a huge country. Mm-hmm. Big. So yeah, it makes sense to me that there would actually be these pockets of societies that, almost mini societies that are kind of in their own bubble doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't bother me because I think it actually does capture, because, you know, at the beginning,
well, then you've got to invoke that. If we're such a big country and we're just going to do the drive from New York to Washington, if we're just doing the Bow Wash corridor, then, and not color the rest of the country other than California showing up with the cavalry at the end. I'm just saying, like, missed opportunity, you know, show Chicago sitting back and you know, I'm not saying you need a John Madden commentator of football going, well, the guys over here are just kind of chilling out and grilling in California, and the guys in the Midwest are just kicking it. Like, are we still playing fucking cornhole while Washington's in flames? I just think,
well, they did
it, wouldn't be that possible. Like, I think the whole country, we saw in 1941, the Japanese bomb, the second smallest state we have with Hawaii, and the entire country rallied like nobody's business. I just don't.
Well, it's,
yeah. Now we're in fantasy land where I just don't think this movie could.
There's no way. This was brought up on Bill Maher's show recently. Like, and I agree with him. There is no way we would unite like that today. There's just no way. It's like if aliens. The question they asked on Bill Maher the other night was, if aliens invaded, would that unite us? And it's like, no. Like, we are so divided right now as a country. And you're mentioning Pearl Harbor. That was the first attack on our soil ever.
Sure.
Like, so, I mean, that's a different thing. And plus, mm-hmm. what is quote unquote good or bad was a little bit easier to identify back then, or at least as the propaganda would say. Now that's hard to do, whether we're fighting wars in the Middle East or we're fighting each other. It's harder now to gauge what is truly good. There's no uniforms with swastikas on them that are telling you who's bad now. So that's the problem is, I'm okay with it because that's the thing is, I think what you're asking there is you're saying, well, I want to know what Chicago's doing. I want to do this. I like leaving that up to my imagination because obviously if Texas and California are in some kind of an alliance and they've reached DC, that means that they have been waging war across the entire country. And I don't need to know, okay, what was this, the Battle of Albuquerque or whatever? Like that, all I know is that it's got to the point, it's very World War II in the sense of you've got Nick Offerman out there saying, we've won and it's great. And it's very like the final days of Berlin, you know, mm-hmm. where it's very clear that he's not winning, you know? And, but there's just, I just think the more detail you get, the less the story succeeds. I think it would actually
That means to me it's a story that can't hold water or weight.
See, let me push back on that, Will, because I'm not asking for every last explanation, but they needed some. For example, I mean, and if you're in a writer's room and they say, okay, what if California and Texas were the two states, not necessarily arbitrarily chosen, but they're the two biggest states. I mean, Alaska maybe has landmass, but it's doesn't have the big economy and everything else. What would they bond together for, these states that are wildly and have been diametrically opposed from each other for decades? Well,
Let's finish.
Is it the economy? Is it they were being taxed more? Is it? I mean, it doesn't have to be a great like. That makes total sense to me. Hell, half the shit going on in our country now doesn't make sense to me. Judges who are supposed to be impartial, completely going along party lines, which is, you know, to me scarier than almost anything we've seen in this movie, because this is really only ratcheting up the violence as far as the divisiveness between states and peoples and not knowing who's what and everybody's the bad guy to the other guy. That's all stuff we're going through right now. This is the only element that's been added to it. But I would have loved to have seen a little bit of why this is. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm a big Twilight Zone fan. I disagree with you some on your Twilight Zone analogy, because Rod Serling was a crazy liberal guy, and he made his politics known through the McCarthy era and the Eisenhower era of American isolationism and sort of the whole commie threat and, you know, anti-art stuff and book burning and the problems with civil rights, known in very, very many of the episodes. The Obsolete Man, Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. I mean, that's all about those issues at the time. Now, some of them were a little bit more sci-fi-ish, like To Serve Man, where it's a cookbook, you know, or is there, you know, beauty in the eye of the beholder, where we all have to be uniform, that we can't recognize that, you know, people can be different even if they look like Donna Douglas. But I think he took a stand, and I think it was very clear his metaphors in that. Here, the metaphors are a little fuzzy, because I know they're all, these are bad people, but I'm not sure what side they're on, how they got together. I also want to push back on at least you and Katie, and this may be the most controversial part of this, but I think it's a little too easy, and I tend to go towards the left, to say there are no winners in war. I grant you, war ruins everything and ruins people, but there are winners. And we have fought wars that kept the world from becoming far worse than it was. And I think the first civil war that we had through, while it was terrible for the country, and I'm not sure we recovered, at least it took us another 150 years to, I'm going with the North on that one. I'm not going to say, oh, we all lose in war. No, we don't. And I think that's a little Pollyanna-ish, and if you don't mind me saying so, to say that there aren't wars, that if we're against the fascist and autocratic movement in this country right now, I think that's a war worth fighting. Because we're going to lose our nation, and why would we want an autocracy? Because one man wants to stay out of jail because he doesn't want to pay his bills and follow the law. I mean, I don't know if we're facing that entirely as simplistic as that, but that's the core of it, and it's about power. And I think that you have to recognize that as awful as war is, and it's terrible, there are wars to be fought for the right reasons. And I think this one, I think, would have benefited from letting me know sort of what the how the sides are, because if they're able to penetrate the White House and turn the military against the whole federal government, which reaches into every state, and governors don't have a say on anything, they can't band together or figure something out. The United Nations and Interpol or the world has no ability to shift or shape any of this.
Yeah,
that's complete fiction to the point of being naivete.
That's right.
Because that's not the world we live in. And they would be, we have certain checks and balances, maybe not on certain levels, maybe not quite at the Supreme Court like we wish now, or certain federal places, but we do in the world. And this acts like there's none of that. And my question is, if that's your position, how do we get there? I think you owe us just a little bit more, you know, meat on that bone, as Don was talking about.
Katie.
I would disagree that I think there are victors in war and not necessarily winners. Talking about the Civil War, yes, the North did win, but I think that the South ended up winning so much more from that victory. We got they got Jim Crow laws that actually took the country back so far that if I actually was speaking to someone about this, like everyone always talks about, if you go back in time, you'd kill Hitler's baby. Why does no one want to kill John Wilkes Booth? Because if he had actually been killed and Abraham Lincoln would have survived, this would be a completely different nation. There are so many aspects in this film that kind of talk about that, because they talk about how, you know, the president had a third term. He disbanded the FBI and then the bombing of the civilians. They sprinkle that. They don't like emphasize it. But it's definitely, there's something that's going on that if you have your military go against you, that's got to be something that you've done something wrong. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's also parts of the military that are like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I know I think, Will, you brought up Carl Glusman character.
Yeah. I didn't recognize him without seeing him in his performance. Yeah.
It's like, I could tell by his eyes, but it's like, he's that little bit one guy looking of at humor. His eyes. Yeah, I am. I'm the one person looking at it.
Yeah.
He's so dreamy. Sure. But well, it's like the fact, like, when they're talking about, it's like, yeah, we're pressed, like, oh, is that why it says press on your van? Yeah, I never would have gotten that. Like, oh God, see, this is the kind of stuff we need, because this is so tense. But one of the things about the film that I love about Alex Garland, and actually all the films that he and especially in this one though, is that you don't have the acts of sexual violence that are in almost every form of war mm-hmm. film. Like, rape is a, I wrote this down. Rape is a tactic of war that's used mm-hmm. throughout mm-hmm. history, especially in the ones that I noted with Bosnia, Rwanda. And this is something that they did not do in this film. Thank you, Alex Garland. He has always been a feminist director, like in Men, in Annihilation, in Ex Machina. And this especially, if he was to do that, I'm so glad that he made sure to do it with this one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like there's just so many things with this film that I love the fact that it's not about why the war started, because there's also the fact that with so much access to knowledge, especially in our time with, you know, TikTok and all that stuff, it can also be manipulated. So, I mean, you think you know why something started, but you don't necessarily know at all. Like, there's stuff that's going on now that honestly that I don't understand.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. And maybe that's where I'm at why I can't make any stump about this or call this movie prophetic or cautionary and all those cute little words that people try to do to politicize an apolitical movie because of the state of the soft civil war that we're in. I just can't, because I look at this movie and I see the holes that I'm talking about. We're like, this is, I don't want to say preposterous, because of course these things can happen. But it is far fetched enough where I'm like, yeah, because I'm watching this and it's doing what it's doing, I can't apply this then to here and now. So when that happens, again, a little more would help, or a little more. I mean, if you want that to punch harder, you got to punch it harder. So,
well, I'll say though, how do they get the uniforms to be different? Because if everyone's in the same army, how do you know who is who?
Yep.
Because I mean, I was actually even thinking that.
Logistical question.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that with the Civil War. Like, when did you guys have time to make those uniforms? Like, that's a lot of stuff. And how do you know who's supposed to be?
Yeah, the Revolutionary War. We originally fought in farmer outfits before constructed uniforms. You know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, if you really want to, shout out to Ian Simmons, who would totally do this, and I can't wait for tomorrow night, because we're gonna do this all again. If you really nitpick the fuck out of this movie. I'm sitting here saying there's no way half the states would be would do the quote unquote pretending this isn't happening and closing their eyes. Not a chance.
Just
in between. No. In a soft civil war of malaise, we're already doing it. But once you're dropping bombs and killing Americans, and you're doing enough things wrong, you have a third term president, and if we're 15 months into this, of what this movie is, there's no way. It's not worse than, again, a couple of robots, a couple of scrunches in Charlottesville.
Two things on that. Well, first, I want to address that my Pollyannaism, the reports of my Pollyannaism are greatly exaggerated.
It's like, if you haven't seen The Twilight Zone, Will, for God's sake, man.
I'll touch on that in a second. However, and to support Katie on the idea about manipulated info, Don, and I know you did this as a generalization, but you said in the beginning of how Texas cowboys and gay guys could get together. One thing I've learned by listening to a lot of commentary on this is, California, yes, and many other states are known for their urban cities being very liberal. But you go outside of that, mm-hmm. it's a whole different world. A lot mm-hmm. of people say they live in places in California that are like the backwoods yeah. of Mississippi.
We've had our red governors here in Illinois.
Right. So I think it's very easy for, especially, and I'd bring up the size of the country again. It's very easy, especially if communication is cut off, manipulated. It's very clear that the president has some kind of state-controlled media in this, because he's saying to everybody, hey, we're winning this war. Like I said, it's very last days of Berlin. Hey, we're winning the war. Don't worry about it. We're good. I think it's very easy in this internet. I mean, we see it all the time, social media is completely changing. And this isn't today.
Here's the thing. Like, I'll go journalistic movie and say, you want to do, here, all the president's men, follow the money. There is too much reliance on the federal teat that there's no way 48 states, 50 states, 10 states, 4 states would, quote unquote, stay out of this. Not a fucking chance.
Well, no, they're not saying the states are. They're saying
it's impossible.
Majority of the people.
That'll happen for sure. But there's no way it wouldn't just cripple everything. You take with the internet, you cripple enough things that are mentioned in this movie, people will be losing their minds, not playing golf in their backyards in Missouri.
That's what I'm saying, though, is we're getting stuck in the weeds of the details.
I invoke the incident stuff here.
Well, and the reason why I mentioned Twilight Zone and Star Trek too, the reason why I mentioned the Klingons is because it's not necessarily about, and I'm not saying this is like Twilight Zone in terms of the Rod Serlingness of it. I'm saying in terms of the what if scenario of it. Okay. So I'm not saying it's a direct comparison to Twilight Zone. It just reminds me of like the scenarios brought up in the Twilight Zone. This is also kind of an Alex Garland thing. And this is why I kind of like all of his movies, or love all of his movies, is because all of them kind of take place in a not too distant future that I think is possible. The thing mm-hmm. about this mm-hmm. movie,
sure.
Yes, you could pick it apart and say, like, what are state governments doing? What is all this crap? That's fine. I understand that. I understand that criticism. But I'm coming at it from just a story, metaphorical thing. The thing about all of his movies, and this not too distant possible thing, is if I told you right now that 5 years from now, with the way this country is going right now in terms of its division, in terms of the fact that people can't even talk to each other if you even invoke a name of someone that you don't agree with that you voted for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not saying to the level of this kind of warfare, but I'm saying like,
oh no,
just like with Ex Machina,
I'll say
just
worse like with than this
Annihilation. Right. What I'm saying is, what I'm saying is this doesn't seem, even though it's preposterous the way it's broken down in terms of the logistics of the mm-hmm. inside the movie, which is why I don't care. This is, to me, this seems like it's not out of the realm of possibility. And that's why it makes it such a strong movie, because I guarantee if you say 10 years down the line, we're going to actually have a civil war over some of these ideas or these breakdowns of basic American rights. This is not something that's impossible.
I'll ask you to fill in the blank. What ideas and breakdowns? Because the movie doesn't have them.
We obviously know there's a third-term president and a fascist dude with some military stuff.
You need more than that to cook up deplority.
But you don't if you're being metaphorical, if you're being allegorical, you don't need that. We are in fantasy land. There's a civil war.
Chronicles of Narnia Civil War.
That's a little ridiculous, because but it's not ridiculous because it's trying to say something.
I'll tell you what, it's not ridiculous because it's saved by damn good journalism. It's a good journalism movie. I'll never call this an anti-war.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is we're getting too stuck in like, because if, yes, it is a fantasy because there's a civil war in this movie that is not happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than a starship being in space and telling us stories about the human condition. So it's fine.
Those do it better too, because guess what?
I would push back on that, Will, and I'm a big Star Trek fan too. I could literally go through every single episode of the original Star Trek and every mm-hmm. single episode of the Twilight Zone and tell you exactly what they're saying, what the metaphor is, and where Rod Serling or whoever wrote that comes out on the politics right of it.
Sure.
Period. End of story, full stop.
The politics of this is
it's gone into chaos and we're now very, very violent. I think it owes us, because to your point, this could happen. We're already halfway into, you know, starting to walk into the waters of this kind of stuff. Grant mm-hmm. you, there are many things to Don's point that could stop us, including some of the things that I was asking where these countries and other places are in this. But mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. would have loved just one or two of them. They don't give us much of anything. I mean, to get to this in 15 months, it's taken the Republican Party to get to autocracy 30 to 50 years. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight.
Will Eyed Spot 2025? Will Eyed Spot?
No. They say that this happened 15 months ago. That's said in the movie. That's the closest as you get to stating any kind of actual fact about the status of the nation. And I want to know how we got there that quick, because
maybe succeeding. But there's other factions that they don't talk about. There's
but I wish they would just have talked about a couple of them to give us a little more context. Because by the time they get to the apocalypse now, parts of it, I'm feeling like it's apocalypse now. It's like, okay, this is a road trip, and everywhere they go, it's crazy land. But yet they're crazy themselves, wanting to get some sort of interview with the president. For what? What's your take of it now that the country has fallen? I want to know what their thoughts are, what they want to ask, and what specifically he did, and some of those things. I'm not saying it has to be wall-to-wall of that, and I certainly fill in blanks and stuff. I love Alex Garland. All three of his other movies, I have been a huge fan of. I like this one, too, and I recommend it. I just wish it was more, because I was asking questions where it started to just turn into, okay, this is a very great tense scene, but people are shooting at each other. This is a great, very great tense scene, maybe the best scene in a movie this year with Jesse Plemons. But, you know, he doesn't like people who aren't American. What kind of American are you? That's a great question. To me, that's the question that I want to know. Is that what was driving this whole thing, where we're deciding who's actually a qualified American? Clearly, those from another country aren't. I wanted to know some of those things a little bit more black, you know, just sort of painted bold or black and white, so I understand, because I was missing that.
I think the black and white part, and I'll stop talking so Katie and Don can talk, but I think the black and white part, and this is what people I think are forgetting a little bit, is we are automatically assuming that some of these photojournalists are the heroes of the picture. And this goes more towards the no one wins in a fight kind of situation. Mm. There's a scene where the gal from Priscilla, I don't know her name, which I couldn't believe was her. I couldn't believe it was her. Yeah. I didn't even know. There's a scene with her and Kirsten Dunst where she asks Kirsten Dunst point blank. She's like, if you catch me in the moment of my death, would you photograph it? She doesn't answer the question, but you get an idea that maybe she would, because she's so detached from reality at that point in terms of. And the end of the movie, Kirsten Dunst does the heroic act of saving her. And what does the girl do? Takes her picture and then leaves her there alone.
Yep.
Right. And that to me is indicative of when you say that you can watch a Rod Serling and get it. I honestly think I was being a little facetious with the Dalton quote, but it even gets to the point where the quote unquote hero of our picture is willing to get the glory more than cherish a life. And that's the cost of war. I like Katie said about there's victors, but there's not. I mean, we just saw this last year, and I know it's been around, but in books and stuff, but you know, they talk about, you know, in Oppenheimer, they talk about the fact that the creation of this one thing that could possibly be a dehumanizing war crime, dropping this bomb, not only killed people at that moment, but put the world in a unstoppable motion that is still going to this day, you know, 60, 70, 80 years later. And yes, there is values. There's things worth fighting for. Hitler must be stopped, whatever, you know. But the fact that we're able to commit war crimes to stop war crimes, it becomes almost a sapphic victory. It becomes this scorched earth thing. That's why I say there's no winners in this. The purpose, the allegory, It is not like, how did this happen? It's that by at some point, we're going to get to the point where we can't tell what's good or bad anymore, because we're all committing that act of violence.
I can't put that in 15 months. I put that in 3 years. Put that in 4 years. But that's 7 years.
I didn't hear that part.
15 years of collapse. Then we're doing some shit.
I would also argue the movie clearly assigns the other three reporters as being the heroes of this. First of all, there's no other characters to relate to. There's the four journalists. And even the naive girl is probably shameful in her actions, because she's new and green and ambitious, which is probably her greatest sin. She's more sympathetic up until those final moments. But I would say up until then, the other three are fairly much the heroes of this. I think that's actually very clear.
No, I don't think so, because I think
And who else are we cheering for in this film then?
No, I'm not saying who we're cheering for. I'm just saying that, but like, for instance, the Wagner Mora character.
Yeah.
I don't think he's on the good side in terms of what he's desiring. And first of all, you have Kirsten Dunst, who's kind of dead to the world. I mean, she shows her emotions in private, like when she's in the tub, she has these moments where she breaks down a little bit, but she really hardens herself. She's not a relatable person. She's not someone to root for because of some kind of idealistic thing that she's standing for. She's doing, at this point, she's just doing the job like it's mechanical clockwork. And then with Wagner Moura, you have this guy who's like always saying, like, I mean, you look at him in the battle scenes, he's smirking like a madman. He's talking about how the gunfire is making him hard. I mean, this is a hard person to, and at one point and tell me if I'm wrong, but at one point, does he insinuate he's trying to sleep with the younger girl at one point?
If something would happen, it would have happened.
And yet, Will, they are putting themselves in danger. They are trying to get the stories out. They're hardened. They're bitter. They're, you know, typical war reporters who have seen it all and are escaping from whatever by, you know, shutting themselves down or, you know, finding refuse in a pot in a bottle, or maybe even trying to nail the new recruit.
Right.
But there's still reporters covering this. That's a noble venture. They're putting themselves in harm's way every single day. They're the only people we see actually doing anything active in this world. Everybody else is either passively, you know, pretending that it's not going on, at their homes cowering under the table, or standing on rooftops with guns in their hands. And Garland even said he thinks that journalists are the great saviors of all these things, and they need to do their job. So I think they're trying to do that, but they're not perfect. They're not, you know,
they are the heroes
in this movie, even if that one in the last 20 minutes turns a little bit wrong. All I'm saying is
they're not white knights.
And
that's the
monochromatic again. They're as gray as the pictures.
And that's the brilliance of Garland too. Like right now I'm watching his show Devs, that he does a limited series. In the first episode, I mean, it's not a spoiler, it sets up the whole plot. Nick Offerman's in the show and he murders someone in like the first episode. But by episode two, you're already like, God, I kind of feel for this guy. Like he's really good at those grays. Like he finds a way, even when you know they're doing bad things or they're doing things that are not exactly great. But once again, I think that's just an element of the warfare is, look what we're willing to sacrifice as people to get the story, to get this. Mm-hmm. Like, what are we? It's showing the layers of what warfare does. I mean, I know War as Hell is an old school thing that's been going on for decades since film began. I get it. Mm-hmm. But I just think there's more credit due to this approach than, you know, bang, bang, you know, whatever. Well, I don't know. That's just
if you put a funnel to all this and like, all right, if our disillusionment on this side is this, and our callousness on this side is this, or from this character is this, and we have a scene or a section of the area of this journey that's showing this and showing that, if you put a funnel to all that, and again, this can be as intentional as can be as well, but at the same time, what's that get you? When apathy is your biggest emotional draw, you know, because apathy exists and it wins these kinds of things. I get that. Sure. But when you do that though, and your guilt is internalized and your physical survival is uncertain, but apathy is kind of still, that's the biggest permeating stench. You're not going to get very far. Or you're going to miss the more that Jeff and I are wondering about.
So. I don't know. I know is that no matter what side you're on, your truth will be someone else's lie and you're still the enemy to somebody. And I thought that was interesting. Will, that you said that scene regarding Lee and Jesse, because it was at that point in the film that I almost felt there was like some sort of like an all about Eve sort of aspect with the relationship with the two of them. And then when you come to the end and you see that, I mean, one of the things I think is brilliant about the film is that you go through different scenarios of what Lee has seen and what she's experienced and what she's photographed. It's like in her face, a man with a tire around himself that someone has put on him, and then he's set on fire. Like she's been through hell. And she's just captured it. It's not the good or the bad. It's not like this is, these are the atrocities of war, no matter who's, what side it is, this is what it is. And she gets to that breaking point at the end that it's like, you know, I'm going to sacrifice. I felt like she knew exactly what was going to happen. And I sort of foresaw that happening with Jesse taking her photo when she dies. But that was something, it's like, you know, it's kind of like Lee's giving Jesse the torch. That's like, and now, you know, you have to capture all the atrocities and the hate that I've seen.
Yeah. Can we all agree at least that with the exception of a couple of things, like when the one dude gets shot and he doesn't know it, you know, until about 4 minutes later when he's driving, or you know, when she has that breakdown,
bleeding side.
Stephen McKay. Yeah.
Give you 40 minutes.
Sammy. Yeah. Well, other than that, can we agree that this doesn't take a lot of easy ways out in terms of the drama? I don't think it does. I think
that last 30 minutes to me is a nice jolt of explosiveness. That's a little too late. I mean, you got Plemons, which is again a great scene. Somebody's cocktail napkin, and that is fantastic.
Apparently, that was last minute. He wasn't
right?
Yeah, the actor dropped out, and Kirsten Dunst said, "Like, hey, what did you?
My husband
have in there?"
Yeah, but that 30 minutes, that last 30 minutes, when finally. Let's really see Harm's way. Let's put that iconography to the test. Let's see if this journey to the seventh circle has gotten us to the point where we can start to care a little more, or drop our jaw a little bit in awe. It can do that. Not to the degree of the impact could have been so much more if there was a little more behind it, but especially by the time you get to that, we're going through the White House like it's a video game. You know, that's amazing when done right.
It's pretty amazing. Great sequence. I mean, some of the best
action. Take that out of the movie, and this is really boring. Yeah.
Oh, well, I was never bored throughout the whole thing. I was engaged the whole time.
You've got that last shot, which is just a universal picture that's been done so many times in actual settings of war, where
smirking victory stuff, right? The
big game hunter picture that it's like, and this is what we did.
That's what we devolved to, and I get that as a coda. That's a nice, that's finally a punch, but man, too little, too late. Fine film, well made, and Plemons saves it in the middle.
Agree to disagree.
I know. I'd rather watch Arlington Road. I'd rather watch The Siege. I'd rather watch Parallax View. The stuff that Jess mentioned. I need to go harder than this. Sorry, guys.
Well, I'll mention one thing real quick that I saw on Twitter the other day, and I thought it was pretty cool. I don't know who posted it, but I think we can all agree this is pretty neat. Someone said something like, while they were watching this movie, they realized, holy crap, there's a 40 plus year old woman that's leading this film, and we don't get to see that. I think that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we don't really get to see women get a chance to kind of do this, at least at that age, you know? And I think that's really cool. I thought that was a great touch. And I do agree that, Garland is a great, feminist filmmaker. In fact, I think he's Ex Machina, as everybody knows, is like in my top 10 all time. It's one of my all time favorite movies. I just adore it. I bought the first ever A24 book of Ex Machina, and it has the original script in it. And he actually even censored himself. He actually had a number of sex scenes in that movie that he cut out because he probably was like, yeah, this is a little much. And so he even knows how to censor himself, which I think is pretty cool. And he's kind of the more arty, hip, indie rock Christopher Nolan anyway. If you ever see him in interviews, he's kind of, he seems like the kind of guy you'd want to like smoke a joint with, listen to music with, but he's also like, you know, really into black holes or some shit. So, agree to disagree. I think, obviously we're not
on. Look at us have our own
two and two. War, or something.
Right?
Yeah. We're obviously not on the, Jeff, if you gave this, I didn't see what your ranking was because Rotten Tomatoes put the wrong movie on your quote.
Yes.
What would you give this out of five?
I recommended it, but I still gave it 2.5 stars because I think for me it was well done, but a lot of things that I had issues with. Mm-hmm. But I think to my earlier point, these are the kind of movies you want people to see, even if there are faults in them. And I think we have to encourage these kind of movies to be made. There's so much well done here and so much good stuff that even though I'm mostly with Don here being the naysayer, there's the stuff that you guys like are things that Don and I both like too. And a lot of this I think is incredible. So bravo. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted, like I said, and as Don was saying, a few more points made about some of the things. I am going to say the only thing I will stand in opposition here is as awful as war is, and it's always filled with losers and filled with victims, and everybody, even if they win, somehow loses in a way. I think to say that this is one of those situations as a metaphor for what's going on today, that all sides are kind of to blame or a problem, whatever else, I think is simplistic. Huh. And I don't agree with that. And I think if you look at history, would I have rather had the North win even if they screwed it up for the next 150 years? Yeah. Well, and other places along the way. So for me, I wanted a little bit more of a stance on this one, but that's major criticism.
Bringing up things I disagree with when we're trying to end the episode.
I'm just telling you, because I got to get the last line in. Yeah. And that's the point. There are sides to take in a war.
Yeah.
Sure.
You saw my 3 to 5. Petey, what's your rating here?
If I would rank it 4 out of 5. And I'm happy that it's the highest grossing A24 opening weekend film in the history of A24. And for it's also the highest budgeted film of A24, and it's already made half its budget, which I'm very surprised at that, and I'm very happy with that people are going out to see it.
Yeah. Well, I loved it. So, I mean, it's right now, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of 2024 films just because of time, but I put this right up there with Live with the Devil for me is my favorite so far of the year. So it's up there. It's a good, I loved it. So I can't, I'm definitely going to see it again. And I've been talking about it and like all Alex Garland movies, I just kind of can't stop thinking about it. And just to me, that's a success. So. Has our civil war ended?
I know.
Okay. All right.
Brother against brother.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. All right. Well, folks, before we do this outro, we do have merch from shirts to stickers. Find some sweet cinephile hissy fit swag on tpublic.com/user/ruminationsradio network. And I must say that so many times, at least 150 plus times now, that I already get ads for my own t-shirts on my Instagram page. So that's great. I better get them for free. I'm not paying for them. But follow us on Twitter at CinephileFit, on Facebook at Cinephile His Fit Podcast, and Instagram at CinephileFits. Find both of us by name on Letterboxd to check out our film reviews and ratings. We are also on Rotten Tomatoes. Thank you so much for your loyal listenership and our tussles and for connecting with us on social media. Cinephile Hissy Fit is a Ruminations Radio Network podcast sponsored by Film Obsessive. If you enjoyed the show, the Ruminations Radio Network has more excellent programming with stellar hosts and spirited topics. Please rate, review, and subscribe to our show and others on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your favorite podcast. And to all those loyal listeners out there, I say this. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.